Welcome to Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie, joined by Darren, and we bring you the news, reviews and recommendations of the latest theatre.
We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and the next hot ticks.
Well, hello, Darren.
Well, hello, Natalie.
How are you?
I'm very well, very well. How's Cornwall? You're down in Cornwall for the rest of these holidays, yeah?
I am. Yes, I've been enjoying my Easter holiday. The weather has been, well, you know, it's a British spring. So much as we're getting those extra hours of daylight in the evening now, it's still kind of up and down. But we have had a glimpse of the sunshine and it's felt nice and warm-ish when it's come out. But it's just beautiful scenery down here. And I'm looking forward to popping and visiting the Minack Theatre at some point in my travels.
Is that their local theatre down there?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's kind of carved into the... I mean, I've never been, but I've seen gorgeous photos and I know people that have performed there, but it's got a view of the sea and it's just beautiful. And so I'm waiting for the better day of my trip.
Okay, wonderful. Wow. All right, that sounds really exciting. What kind of shows do they put on there?
All sorts of things, really. But as I say, I haven't really been there, so I'm not really that wise. I think probably Shakespeare. I'm just guessing and stabbing in the dark.
It sounds like a kind of venue that would do a bit of Shakespeare. Maybe a bit of Chekhov. I don't know.
I think Emma Rice Wise Children as well. But I think, again, I'm just making stuff up. I haven't really done my research, but I'm keen to go. I know where it is, so I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, well. But it's a bit better than being in drab London right now, to be fair. But, you know, we are entering into the main part of spring. So let's see whether or not the sunshine does come out. We have a glorious summer this year, which would be nice, especially for the open air stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Regent's Park open air season is beginning. Globe Theatre season will be beginning shortly. Yeah. You and I need a trip to Spain. I just need some sunshine.
Sounds divine. Which will bring us on to The Divine Mrs. S, which I saw at the Hampstead Theatre. And I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was laugh out loud. It was historically wonderful in the sense of like getting a little bit of history of that period and the time, and also the people, characters that were around then. It obviously starred the gorgeous Rachel Sterling playing opposite Dominic Rowan. And it was, honestly, Natalie, it's one of the best plays I've seen in a very long time. It's written by April De Angelis. And it is a hilarious backstage comedy, and it literally recalls the origins of celebrity culture. What I mean by that is Sarah Siddons, who is Mrs. S, she was known as the first celebrity. And what I mean by that is she was the first kind of star of the theatre, star of the stage, back in the Drury Lane when it held 3,500 people. My gosh, that's a big venue. And yeah, so she was the first woman who was known to be a celebrity in the sense that she was trolled, so she would get letters that, you know, hatred letters, ban letters, all these sorts of things, men falling at her feet. Like, you know, she was the star of the day in London's West End. And this is turn of the century, like 19th century. So, you know, we're talking a couple of hundred years ago now. And it was wonderfully directed by Anna Macmillan, plays that have historical drama and real characters. Definitely her thing. But I have to say, Natalie, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So as I said, the play is set at Drury Lane Theatre. I'm assuming it's not the same theatre that exists now. Obviously, the same place. Or maybe it is. They just managed to cram 3,500 people into a venue that holds over 2,000 now. I guess people were much smaller back then. Maybe that's what it was. But then they wore bigger dresses, didn't they? Not the men, obviously. Well, maybe some of the men. So I'm not sure how that works out, actually. But that's what they said. Anyway, so yeah. So it's 1800 is where it is set. And yeah, but what's interesting, Natalie, as well, is the whole thing about women and how they're treated in society. I mean, obviously, things have come on a lot since then, thank goodness. There's still, obviously, things that need to be sorted out. But the thing about her husband controlling her money, so she gets paid and her husband controls what she can spend. It's just things like that. It just is completely bizarre, obviously, within today's society of how people lived. But that's how it was. You know, a woman who wanted to leave her husband was sent to the lunatic asylum. I mean, how bonkers is that? But I have to say, it was really well done. It's only a small cast of six. Obviously, a friend of yours, Gareth Snook.
Oh, yes.
Played three characters in it very well. did a brilliant job on every single one of them.
Love Gareth. We've interviewed him. Well, I've interviewed him a lot on the podcast. More recently, he did that very long extended tour of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he played Willy Wonka. And we had a nice chat about that. So what part was he playing in this one?
Well, he played a couple of parts, actually. He played a character called Borden, Thomas Lawrence, and Percy Scraggs. And so he was the theatre critic, was his main part. And he was really funny. He was really clever in that as well.
He'd be brilliant at that, yeah.
I could really see that he was the kind of main critic of that era. The way he used his words, things he said. And he adored Mrs. S, Sarah Siddons, and was a big fan of her. So he'd really write and champion about her work.
Yeah, he's such a brilliant character actor and a multi-role play situation. I'm imagining he would be fantastic in. I remember when he was in Romantics Anonymous back at the Bristol Old Vic, and he played a couple of different characters, and just amazing switching, the differentiation between the two. Yeah, really good. I must come and see it, actually.
Yeah, do. I would recommend it to anybody who loves a really good drama with a lot of comedy. And seriously, all of the actors in the piece were on top of their game. They were spot on. I mean, seeing Rachel Sterling on stage and playing in that character all the emotional levels were there. You really felt for her. You really were with her. You know, she just wanted to act. That was her thing. And she was controlled by her brother, wonderfully played by Dominic Rowan. And it's funny, it's one of those things where he was at the beginning, they're almost doing, it's behind the scenes, so you never see what's going on in the front. So it's from backstage. And the big opening scene is Kemble and Sarah on stage, and they're doing this dramatic ending to this play. And Kemble's really over, everything is over the top, and I'm doing this. And it was like, oh, okay. And then you've got this kind of like heartfelt performance overplayed again by Mrs. S. But it was that's the kind of thing that the audiences wanted. It's all this so dramatic and so big that it was incredibly fake. And what Sarah's trying to do is bring in some kind of like natural naturality to it in some respects. So feel. And there's this scene later on, it's really quite sweet, where she puts her hand on her brother's chest and he only has to say, like, you know, be in pain, like, ah. And the way he was doing it before was this almost a dramatic kind of, oh. And when she, like, said, feel it, you know, and she's giving him some help. And then all of a sudden, for the first time ever, he felt something. You know, when you're acting, you're actually feeling it as opposed to acting it.
Mm. So she directed him, essentially, yeah.
And she said, no, that's acting.
Boo.
But it was really sad because she wanted to do plays that really kind of gave her and amplified her talents, and it was all aimed at the men. So the women were the lesser characters. But she befriended this playwright who had to pretend to be a man beforehand because women's plays weren't put on stage, or very less of them. And when she came out as a woman, the wonderful, wonderful, who was played by Sadie Shimming, Mrs. Larpent, who's the censor of the day, who would come and see a play and say whether or not it's right, you know, fit for purpose and right for the audiences, would either take it off stage or allow it to be on. And once they find out the playwright's a woman, then obviously it's cancelled. And it's just like, what is going on? Bless them. But yeah, really thoroughly enjoyed it. It was, like I said, one of the best comedy plays I've seen in a very, very long time. And it just had all the elements for me, to be fair. Great cast, great writing, great direction. So, yeah.
Yeah. And, so, I mean, Rachel Sterling's a fantastic actress. I mean, I remember working with her a long, long time ago. We were back at the National Youth Theatre together in a production of Othello. So, yeah, wonderful to see her doing stuff. So I'll definitely try and get along and see this one. It's at Hampstead until the 27th of April, so... A little bit of time,
but bear in mind, it's one of those shows that it will come around so quick and it's gone.
I know.
I do hope it does something more. It would be lovely to see a show from the Hampstead transfer to West End. I think it's been a while since the last time, so it definitely deserves it. But a big shout out to Anushka Chakravarti, I've got a name right, who plays Patty. Wonderful, wonderful presence on stage. I mean, everyone, Eva Feller, again, I hope I got her surname right, who plays multiple characters, all very well done. And yeah, big shout out to one of our favourite actors, Gareth Snook.
Yeah, fabulous. Well, looking forward to that one. And then I went over to the opening night of, well, it was the gala opening, whatever, I mean, West End, of Mind Mangler. Mind Mangler, member of the Tragic Circle, and this is over at the Apollo Theatre. Oh, this was hilarious. So this is part of the Mischief Theatres empire. As you're probably aware, you've probably seen all of these as well, like I have. So the play Where Everything Goes Wrong, comedy about a bank robbery, Peter Pan Goes Wrong, Grown Ups, etc. So I think we've both seen all of these.
Yeah, I have. I saw the original company for Play Goes Wrong. And it's interesting because when I saw Play Goes Wrong, because I saw it very, very early on, it's one of those shows where the audiences didn't quite know what to do and what to make of it. And I saw it almost as a kind of audience participation show because they were opening up the fourth wall. They were talking to it. So I remember one of the actors, one of the characters doing something and I heckled him and he heckled me back. And it was like, ah, now I get what this show is. And then other people started to kind of get involved and that's how it kind of went about. And I remember seeing the producer after, Mark, who's one of my original actually investors in my shows, and I apologized to him. He said, no, this is how the show's meant to be, how it's meant to be shaped. And also got a story about Peter Pan Goes Wrong. I heckled one of the actors so badly that he brought me to the stage. He actually brought me up, and it was all to do with opening a bottle. It was Captain Hook, and he couldn't open it with his hook. And I shouted out, "Use your teeth!" And he shouted out, "You use your teeth! Come here!" So yeah, so that was at a press night as well. So it was me sitting next door to one of the PRs, thinking, "Oh no, I'm so sorry." He goes, "Nope, up you get, off you go." So yeah, so how
you've got to stop heckling people?
Well, it depends on the show. I mean, you know, I wouldn't do it to like a traditional. I wouldn't obviously do it to Mrs. S, but yeah,
if I know, it's that kind of talking about bringing a cabbage to my show
and tomatoes, yeah, maybe, and it have to be a rotten cabbage if my guinea pigs haven't eaten it first.
Wow, you are meany beanie. But anyway, I mean, this was fantastic. It was so much fun. It's only there for a 6-week run, so it ends on the 28th of April. It was originally sort of back in 2022 at the Pleasance Theatre Edinburgh Festival. And this is Henry Lewis and Jonathan Sawyer at the best. It's kind of, it looks like it's a one-man show, but it slowly opens up as a two-man show. There's a couple of things that I won't say because, it would be a spoiler alert. So I'm not going to go into depth and detail. And Tom Wainwright is involved in the writing of this as well. I mean, I just wrote, laugh out loud, hilarity entangled with mischievous audience manipulation. There were moments where the audience come up. It was a really good, fun night out. It was the gala night, so obviously there was an extra vibe and buzz, and a lot of people connected with the theatre industry were there that night and had brought their children. So it was very much, fun for all, the family, humour, comedy, and absolutely hilarious because, the Mind Mangler himself, it's basically taking the piss and sending up mind reading and magic and magicians. And it's done in a really sort of tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic, fun way. But along the way, there are some brilliant tricks and you're like, oh, wait a minute. How did they do that? Because most of the time it's just ridiculousness. And then every now and then they throw one in, which really catches you off guard. But I had so much fun, really enjoyed it. 2 hours, including an interval. If you want a really fun night out, midweek to cheer you up, to beat these springtime rainy blues, I think this would be a great show for you to go to. And, I took my 18-year-old son. We both had a giggle. And it was just really, really good fun. You'd love it, Darren. You should definitely pop along and see it.
Yeah, I haven't seen Magic Goes Wrong either. So, yeah, maybe I should come see this one because I do like magic shows. I do like comedy. And obviously, it's combining both elements. So what's not to love, really?
Absolutely. And, you know, there were some farcical moments that built up and up and up as well. And they were really great. So thank you so much to Storyhouse PR for the tickets and for inviting us to the gala. It was great fun. And, you know, I wish them the best of luck with their 6-week run.
Moving on from the magic and mystery of the Mind Mangler. See what I did there. I just want to do a shout out to a friend of mine, Simon Meaden, who directed a double bill of plays called Single Spies by Alan Bennett at Questers in Ealing. Now, it's a kind of like a local theatre, I guess, like Amdram Society. It's a beautiful space. They have like a roster of about 250 actors that regularly perform there. They do like a series of plays throughout the year, musicals, all sorts of things. It's a wonderful, wonderful space. And the space that we was in was called the Judi Dench Playhouse, which, I mean, God, that name alone is something. But these two plays by Alan Bennett, they're part of the Cambridge Spies from the 1930s stories, which he wrote some time ago, actually. The first one is An Englishman Abroad, which is set in 1958, and then A Question of Attribution, which is set a decade later. The wonderful, wonderful plays, really lovely performed. Some of the best Amdram I've seen in a very, very long time. And Simon did a terrific job of directing this series of two plays. And I just want to say about the theatre. The theatre is called the Judi Dench Playhouse. So Questers is the theatre, but there's two studios. And so the one was in the Judi Dench Playhouse. And it was fabulous. Lovely space. Shame there's not more spaces like this around other places in London, especially in the West End. A nice small kind of like studio feel to get, I don't know, some smaller shows off the ground.
Yeah. Well, that's what we said, because that's why we're sad that the studio went at Trafalgar Theatre, because that was a lovely space and so conveniently placed as well, being right next to Charing Cross Station. So, yeah, we do need more of these small experimental spaces, definitely.
We do, but sadly, they don't make much money. And obviously, a lot of the bigger producers like Cameron McIntosh, who's obviously more concerned about money over creativity, it seems. Without the kind of like people like them bankrolling it just wouldn't happen. I mean, Anika Burns, obviously her new space, it's not a small theatre, but it's not a big space either. But at least with her work, she is trying to champion, you know, emerging talent, new writing.
Oh, absolutely. Red Pitch was brilliant the other day, and for Black Boys as well. Just, you know, again, both of these shows I'm going to go back and see again before the end of their respective runs, because they were just fantastic. I can't fault them, really. I just keep going back over these plays.
Yeah, we need
absolutely.
We need a multiplex theatre instead of any more multiplex cinemas. You know, if you imagine, say, View in Leicester Square closed down as a cinema, reopened as a 6 kind of stage theatre. How incredible would that be? Even the old Empire on Regent Street, which has closed down now, that's been a theatre before when they did brief encounters some time ago. It's shut down, it's boarded up.
I mean, it would be so easy to transform it, because literally the seats were gorgeous and super comfy. Cinema seats are often way more comfy than theatre seats. And that was such a beautiful stage, nicely wide, and it was just so beautifully done, Brief Encounter. That was, I'd forgotten about that one. That's definitely on my top 10 list of best pieces of theatre I've ever seen in my lifetime. We should do that list at some point. Top 10.
Yeah, we could do like a summer summary of the best shows we've seen in our extensive careers, as it were.
Yeah, we could do that whilst recording live from Spain, looking out over the golf course when we haven't seen anything for a week.
sounds perfect to me. Sounds perfect.
Sounds divine.
It sounds divine. Divine. Just like the divine Mrs. S. Speaking of another divine actress who I adore is Victoria Hamilton Barrett. Now, obviously, right now she's just finishing up on Bronco Billy. I think it was just the last weekend now. And I managed... Finally, we tried to pen a date for like weeks and weeks. Either she'd cancel because of things going on with her, or I'd cancel because things going on with me. And then we finally got it together and we had a Zoom call. I would rather have been in person because I'd really love to meet her properly. And also in-person interviews, as we both know, are so much better sound-wise. So do bear with us on the sound of this one because it was over Zoom. But Victoria had so much to say about everything. It was such a wonderful conversation. And this is what she had to say.
I'm on a Zoom call with West End star Victoria Hamilton Barrett, who's been in shows such as In the Heights, A Chorus Line, Grease, Hex, Cinderella, The Wild Party, Murder Ballad, and Mamma Mia. Was Mamma Mia your West End debut?
Yeah. So I think I did Mamma Mia in 2002. Yes, so that was my West End debut. Professional debut, I suppose, in theatre was a show called Oh, What a Night, which was more of a travelling show. It was always on tour and it was at Hammersmith Apollo for a little while. So that was a really good introduction to the industry. But yes, and then I carried on doing more and more of the shows. And here I am still to this day. How many years later? I don't do that maths very well.
So it's like 22 years. Yeah.
3 years. So yeah, I'm still here. Somehow.
Still here. And you really do have an extensive career. I mean, Hex. Tell us about Hex for a little while. How did that come about?
Hex was brilliant. So I auditioned for the National, for Hex, for the role of Queenie. They had an unsuccessful year of trying to put the show on the year before because they got COVID cancelled. Like a lot of shows that was, you know, experiencing the same thing. We were going through it with Cinderella at the time, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cinderella. So they never really got the closure or the joy from the show that they wrote, you know, the year prior. So they put it on again. I don't even think Hex had a press night that COVID year. So they were really missing out. So they did it the farming for the following Christmas, basically. And then I was auditioning for it. And then I managed to back that job. And I'm really glad I did because I'm terrible at auditions. I'm shocking. It's never a true example of what I can do. It's quite imposing and not very pleasurable, to be honest. There's not many of us that enjoy auditions. And if they do, maybe they're lying or a little bit sick and twisted. But I managed to get enough of a job. Thank goodness, because it was a great show, a little bit bonkers, and I just had an absolute ball.
So what was the process like on Cinderella? Did you not audition for that as well, or...?
No, I didn't. I was called in to do the early workshops for Andrew and Emerald Fennell and our creative team about 2 or 3 years prior to it coming into the West End. So both me and Carrie at Fletcher, I think we're the only ones that did the original workshop process. So we were really fortunate and lucky that we got to develop our roles from the very beginning with the creative team. So it was really exciting because we had a big sway on where the book went, where the songs went, which is, I think, any actor is like going to jump to that opportunity because that's just a dream position to be in. I think everyone wants basically a part written around their abilities and funny things that they may say and input within like, you know, the certain dialogue and stuff like that. Because you do, you have a lot of sway in those early stages of workshops for any show that goes into the West End and Broadway. So, yeah, in the end, it worked out, I guess, but it took a little while because, again, we kept on getting put back by COVID also.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed Cinderella. I loved the staging. I thought the storyline, you were fantastic. You have this, like, knack of being a wicked stepmom. I mean, that brings into Bronco Billy because you're playing... A wicked stepmother again. I mean, you're going to get typecast in these roles? I mean, what's going on here?
I think so, actually. My husband's a little bit worried about it. He's like, I think we have to step away from these roles. I just have such a good time doing them because they're so dumb and silly and you just get to be really naughty on stage. You know, it doesn't take me much to be a bit naughty. And I just love it because... Luckily, both directors just trusted me to just do whatever I wanted to do. So I never get in trouble. And if I do get in trouble, it's never really ends up being my fault. It's so sneaky because I do get away with more murder. It's great. It's great when you have directors that are brilliant in the sense that they allow that kind of thing pattern on stage, especially in comedy. Comedy is one of these things. I was explaining this to a student the other day. you can't plan comedy. You know, comedy has to, it's such a surprise. It's such a moment, something that happens in that very moment. You know, you shouldn't have to know where it truly goes. It should have a shape. You've learned the script and everything. But if you don't create space to play, you're never going to get the best out of comedy. So luckily, more recently, I've been really fortunate with certain directors that just let me just get on with it. And then what happens? You've got a role that ends up growing and growing and just finding more goodness in the story and in the scenes of what you're putting together. You know, it should never be stilted. It should always forever be growing, especially in comedy. So, but yes, as in a way of being typecast, I think I'm well and truly typecast, Darren. I don't think there's any escaping that now. But I'm thrilled with that. I love it. But my husband thinks I need to try something else.
Something else? Oh, God. Well, like what? What would he rather you be doing?
I just love comedy. And I think there are these roles that are a bit, you know, these wacky women that I get to play, you know, and stuff. But, you know, I think he's like, you are a serious actor as well. You know, you're very serious and you should be doing this. I want you to be doing Shakespeare. And I'm like, yeah, no, I agree. I want to be doing Shakespeare. I've been wanting to do Shakespeare since I left college. But, you know, people have to be the first to kind of get you in that. Once you do something, one thing, then they start bringing you in for everything. This is the same thing that what happened with me with, for example, the stepmother. Then I go and play another wacky older woman. And then I go and play another wacky older woman. All these comedy roles, you know, it's just, you know, one casting director needs to, you know, take that action, bring you on board. And then before you know it, you get very typecast. I remember when I did Murder Ballad, I was like the narrator. And then every audition I did after that, it was like the narrator, the narrator. Then I was like, oh, these people. It's like, oh, yeah, she's got, you know, narration on her CV. She must be good at this. Bring her on for another thing, you know, blah, blah. But, I think that's the industry and that's how it works. I'd love to do Shakespeare, but I guess someone's going to let me be able to breathe in the room to allow that to happen.
Which Shakespeare would you like to do?
Yeah. Oh, I don't really know. I'm not very fussy. I think I'd be foolish if I was fussy.
Did you train as a musical theatre performer, or was it an actress and then the musicals come secondary?
No, I originally was a ballet dancer, so I went to a very top ballet school called Central School of Ballet, and then I ended up going to the Erdang Academy, but when it was a primary school, secondary school, and then a college, it's not that now. It's purely a college, and it's moved. It used to be a little poor school in Covent Garden, just off Shelton Street, Langley Street, on that corner there. It's actually where the Hawkshaw Steakhouse is. You know, where pineapple is, the Hawks was like, so whenever I walk down there, it's so weird because I'm like, that's where we used to shower. And that's where we used to sleep over. So we slept over in that building. You know, that's cute. We locked ourselves in the building. Yeah. We do, kids do dumb stuff like that, you know, and then they freak out because these buildings are incredibly haunted, some may think. But, it's very weird. So it was a little Paul school in Covent Garden. Now it's a big school in Angel, in Islington. And it's like a big factory now, you know. Whereas they churn out the talent. Back then, there was very few students. You know, now there's a whole, you know, there's a whole load of them. But yeah, where was I going with this? I was saying something about
musical theatre. How you got into musical theatre? So through your dance.
I distract myself very easily. So yeah, originally I started at the dance, but then I was doing acting lessons, like kind of like one-on-one acting lessons or in small groups as a younger child. I always knew that that's what I wanted to do. But because I have ADHD, I guess I had it, it was quite hard to, just sit still. And, you know, when you're learning and you're in an acting class, there's more stillness. When you're dancing in a dance class, there's a lot of movement. So I guess that's how I ended up pursuing that a little bit more than, say, the acting route. But I always have one-on-one acting classes, off the books, if you know what I mean, and group sessions and stuff. And this is something that I absolutely, from a very young person, enjoyed way more than the dancing route. I think dancing, I just needed to get rid of a whole load of energy. So my parents just shoved me in that, and they ended up doing really well in that. So everything else kind of came later, and I found my voice, my singing voice, very late at the age of 14 years old. And I remember the absolute moment when it happened with my singing teacher, Helen Roy. And I was thinking, oh, you know what? I think I might be able to sing. I had no idea. And I was like, that sounded not bad. You know, we had those little tape recorders back in the old days. And I just remember playing it over and over again. It doesn't sound too bad. And I was 14 years old. So Yeah. So where you can sing, dance and act, there's always going to be employment in a musical. And that's what's happened. And, you know, I have 23 or coming up to 25 years later, you know, doing what I'm doing.
Do you have a favourite show that you've been in so far?
Do you know, I've been enjoying More Gregory. I'm absolutely adoring this show. It's got so much heart, such a beautiful message. You know, you've got two worlds coming together, colliding together. It's all about pursuing your dreams. And yes, it can be cheesy at times, but we love it for that because it's a very, very fun and silly show with good slapstick comedy. And it's really having a good old giggle at itself. And I think with the time that's going on now in the world with current affairs and everything, I think we need a bit of a silly laugh and with a good, true message at the end. And that is definitely Bronco Billy. So I'm actually going to say Bronco Billy is up there with one of them. And I loved what I, you know, had the opportunity to create it with Cinderella. I really, really, really did, you know. That was a great role for me and I had fun doing that. And then there was things like playing Louise, Gypsy Rosalie and Gypsy. I did that at Curve. I loved playing that role. Murder Ballads, you know, and definitely In the Heights, with playing Daniela in the Heights. That was a real dream of that. Dream show for me. That was like, I always say that was like my chicken soup for the soul show In the Heights. It was an absolute joy. And if it was ever going to come back, I'd be begging to go back in.
But you had
these things happen.
Weren't you pregnant in the Heights? Is that right?
I was, yeah. So I did it at the Southwark Playhouse first. Then we got our transfer and I was very pregnant and I finished the show at 8 months pregnant. Yeah.
How was that for the costume department?
It was all stretchy material, so it was okay. So the bigger I got, the material went with me. So luckily, it was actually fine. It was just a lot of dead tight dresses. Then you borrow ASOS, basically, pretty much, because we had to. I couldn't have anything too bespoke and special because I was growing by the moment. So it was like a click job on ASOS, you know, and it was a real stretchy. It wasn't a maternity dress, but it was a stretchy dress that just kind of went with me. So, yeah. So that was great. And I loved doing that show pregnant. I think it actually meant a lot more, that character, that role, the stakes and at the very end there and her story. I think, yeah, it meant a lot more. But it was a brilliant show, that one. Yeah.
So would you say motherhood has influenced your career?
Oh, I don't know. I think, do you know, I was never really an ambitious person. I've never been really been hungry for my career. I've just kind of been going along with it. Had I been a little bit more ambitious, maybe things could be a little bit more different now in the way of my profile and, you know, how, what I'd be doing to this day. I don't know, but I was never really a big dream chaser. So I would just kind of go along with it. You know, I was a bit too casual. Really, much to my mum's, you know, disapproval. She was like, you need to really kind of, you know, tune into this. But it's never really been in my nature to kind of be that hungry for it. But then the kids came along and then I just turned into, like, when I was doing Murder Ballad, I think I just, like, turned into some Mariah Carey or Madonna, like, person where I always became vicious. I was like, all right, now I can do this. Because once you've been in labour for 5 days, you know, and then you have an emergency C-section, you literally think you can do anything. So anything after that is just, it's baloney. It doesn't matter. It's just nonsense. And so I did Murder Ballad. And then that's when I got my first Olivier nomination because I literally couldn't give two hoots. I couldn't give a damn. So I just went for it. And yeah, I guess it did change me. So maybe when the kids came along, because also you've got to put bread on the table, haven't you? There's got to be bacon in someone's mouth. And I think it made it, it improved my outlook, I think, in the way I've seen this industry. Instead of like playing along with it, I'm riding it more now. Yeah. And definitely, certainly more ambitious than I ever was before.
Tell us about the Olivier. You've been nominated. You've won twice now.
No, I've never won.
You never won?
I've nominated. Yeah. No, I haven't won. But maybe one day. So, you know, we can steal. I can dream a little. I can have that little dream. Lucky to be nominated. One for Murder Ballad, which is what we were just talking about. And the second one was for Cinderella.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was for Cinderella, for Stepmother.
Maybe you'll win the award for the best actress in a Shakespeare play.
Oh, man. Can you imagine that? I'd be like on the phone to you. I'd be like, Darren, do you remember when we had that chat? Look at me now. look at me now, Dazza. You know, and I will have that chat. We'll have that chat. See, maybe you'll be third time lucky in a Shakespeare piece. I'm going to hold on to that dream and start dreaming.
Definitely. Well, you know, I'd certainly cast you in it. I was cast you in anything personally, but there you go. Desperately Seeking Susan.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it. I mean, it's a long time ago. It didn't last very long, obviously, no. But I really enjoyed it. You know, what's not to love? A story about, a character that Madonna kind of created with Blondie music.
Yeah, do you know what? The cast loved it. We had a real good time doing it. The punters enjoyed it. They had a great time. The critics couldn't stand it. They didn't understand why it was a Debbie Harry Blondie musical and not a Madonna musical. So they hated it. They absolutely hated it. We had some incredible headers on our reviews, which were all very kind of on the nose. And, you know, they didn't have to try hard to put it that way, Desperately Seeking. You know, it doesn't set you up for a very good review. I loved it. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Actually, that was good because that was like, I think, one of the first comedy roles I had the opportunity to do. And that's how I always saw myself. But I think people always saw me as the sassy, sexy, fierce one that was clicking her fingers and, like, you know, hitching up her skirt and doing some big, you know, sing-song number. But I always wanted to do comedy, you know. So that was great because Desperately Seeking Susan, actually, I think was the first, in employment-wise, was the first job I did that put me in the kind of funny bones area. But I'm glad you liked it. I liked it too. Yeah, we had previews for a whole month and then we were open with the show for a whole month. Yeah, we wrapped it up in 2 months. It was tragic. It was devastating.
Yeah, I always remember the scene where they're running and it's on a treadmill.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a bit bonkers and stuff, but, you know, there you go.
Whenever anyone has a memory, it's that. It was like a travelator with a man with long grey hair running and singing at the same time.
I'm going to get you. I'm going to gonna get you. Yeah, is that? Yeah, yeah.
But was it? Yeah. Simon, oh, my God. It was very, very funny and silly like that. But I had a good time. I enjoyed it. The choreography was insane. The set was insane, you know. It was great. I had good costumes. Yeah, but anyway, it wasn't meant to be, you know.
Oh well. Burt Reynolds.
Oh, I did this cameo, this little cameo part in a film with Baldur Storton. Actually, it's like you've got big list of talent, you know. And then I played an assistant, a film. He was like something like a porn producer's assistant with a clipboard, basically. And I had long hair extensions and, you know, really aggressive eyebrows and aggressive lipstick. And I was clicking my fingers, calling people in to audition for something like a racy movie. So it was only a few lines from me. Luckily, I was up for clothes, you know, so surprisingly. So that was okay. But, and I'm just ticking people's names off on it, off a clipboard, you know, people auditioning for this racy film. I never got to meet Burt Reynolds. Can you believe that? And now he's no longer with us. I missed the opportunity.
Oh, no.
Because I couldn't get him. It wasn't with him. But, there you go. There's my contribution to British cinema there. But I haven't done much since.
You've been stuck on the stage.
Yeah, I've been stuck on the stage. But you know what? I love it. There's no other place I'd rather be. You should go and be in one of those TV shows. I'm like, to be honest, I'm really not so interested. I've always had a love for theatre. That is where my heart lies. I could manage that well. You know, the hours are not great at the moment. Actually, we're getting worse with our hours. We're getting completely rubbish with all the Sunday show nonsense, which is really actually dragging me down. And it's not good for family life at all. But I love theatre. My heart is in theatre. TV and film, I just find it a little bit more restricting and a bit, I don't know, I just love the family hubbub that you get in theatre. You know, I think whenever I've been on set, like I've only done little shows like Holt City and Called the Midwife and obviously like, you know, A Bunch of Amateurs with Burt Reynolds, but it's quite lonely. You're just sitting there in your trailer or your dressing room and no one's coming to visit you. You've got no banter with anyone. You can't cause any mischief. It's just all kind of impersonal. You're called to set, you could do what you got to do and then you leave, you know. So not too much love lost there, although you know, I won't cast it off because I'm just moaning about, I've been moaning about our theatre schedules with these Sunday shows, which is really kind of putting a spanner in the works. It feels like we're becoming more of like the Broadway working schedule since COVID. And so maybe I do start need to kind of think about other things if I'm lucky enough to bag a gig. But yeah, my heart is always in theatre, you know?
Or just choose shows where they don't do a Sunday matinee. Just do a standard, you know, Monday to Saturday. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, what they did Saturday, you know, you don't need to do a matinee on it or a Sunday. It leaves us no time to just be, you know, it's not a normal industry anyway, but just to have family time. You know, some people are carers, some people are, you know, what, parents, you know, some people, you know, we can't celebrate our kids' birthdays, you know, go to their own birthday parties, which is a bit ridiculous unless we put a sickie or we book it as leave. But then, we have to book holiday leave in sets. Oh, I'm ranting now, aren't I? Ranting in sets of 3 days. No, just want to be able to go to my kid's birthday party on a Sunday, you know? Yeah, it's sad. I don't know what's going on. So we're going to have to see to that. I don't mind being a spokesperson for it, to be honest. It seems like I already am. I'm going to get a call. Maybe you're going to call me up and going, that podcast that you did, Victoria, murder. You've been cancelled, babes. You've been well and truly cancelled. Now get your butt to that Sunday show.
You've got, like, literally at the end of the run now. So what's coming up next? Have you got anything lined up?
I got things lined up. I've got things cooking. I can't talk to you about them, though, can I? Certainly will get cancelled, babe. I've got some cool, fun parts that I've been developing. Like, really developing and having a lot of fun with. So it's just all a matter of time. But, you know, these things, they can take a long time to... you know, put on the table. You know, some of these West End workshops that you do for a new upcoming shows, like, they won't come out until like another 3 years or 5 years down the line. It's like insane. Stuff's brewing and cooking. But I think at the moment, what I need to do is, because obviously we haven't got a Sunday show and we haven't got Sundays off, after Bronco Billy's, I'm going to whip those kids and that husband to a nice sunny location for a week, you know, to get some beach air, I think, and make it up to them for the loss of their parent over the last 11 weeks, I think that run would have been. So, yeah. So I'm quite happy to have a little break. To be honest, just a little bit of holiday, you know, just some holiday time, you know. Got another one booked in May. I'm inspired. And my phone will go, I'm on fire. I'm just booking holidays. So I don't know who's paying for them, but, you know, there you go. So we shall see.
You obviously love what you do, and I'm guessing with the people you talk to, especially young up-and-coming performers, but what kind of messages, what kind of, like, inspiring notes could you give an aspiring performer new to their career?
Just things like this, really. It's very simple. Just be yourself. Be comfortable to be yourself. But learn, if you, like me, struggled to know who you were growing up. I think I only really knew who I was when I was about 35-ish around then. It's just like, just, you know, trust your instincts. Don't be too easily swayed, you know, by others. Have your own voice, have your own opinions, and trust yourself. Just trust yourself. To not take things too seriously, you know, it's just a show, or it's just an episode of Casualty. It's just stuff. It's not really that important. Sometimes what I love to do before the show, I just love to think about, sorry, this is really bad, what I'm about to say. In the grand scheme of life, this moment is so insignificant. Like, it's so unimportant. So if I get a bout of nerves, because I get nervous as well, if I'm feeling a bout of nerves because I've got to go on stage and, you know, maybe I'm feeling a bit poorly or a bit unsure, I just think about how unimportant this is. And it's just an episode in my giant box set that is my life, you know, and... no one really cares. No one really, really cares. So take that pressure off yourself. And don't over-rehearse comedy, please. Surprise yourself. Just go on stage. Do not. Go on stage under-rehearsed, you know, and see what goodness you can come up with on the spot. So, yeah, please. That is, I really think, for anyone who's interested in comedy, don't over-rehearse comedy because it will suck. There you go. You heard it here first. VHB just said don't over-rehearse comedy. And yeah, just take out seriousness and just enjoy it. And if you stop enjoying it, pull out of the industry. There you go. Brutal.
Why not grab a ticket to one of the shows mentioned in this podcast? Tune in next time and recommend us to your friends and family.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. Until the next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.